There are all kinds of different reasons why people want to change career. People can be a part of that. And I think one of the challenges when our identity starts to change, like that's when you start to shift into, okay, well, maybe I would like to start my own business, is that the people that you are currently working with are on maybe a different path to you. And so career change can sometimes feel a little isolating, and having a coach is great in that sense because you've got someone in your corner championing you and challenging you at the same time.
Hello, and you're very welcome to another episode of the Life Well Lived podcast with me, Shane Breslin. My guest on this episode, and whose voice you heard just now, is Dr. Nicola Porter. Nicola Porter has been a lecturer in psychology for the best part of 20 years and has in recent years added an accreditation in executive and life coaching and established a practice specializing in career coaching and career change for mid-career professionals. This set of skills and experiences allows Nicola to combine everything she's learned from psychology and the science of behavior with professional coaching tools and techniques to provide an effective and evidence-driven approach to career change for her clients. In this conversation, we chat about everything from the micro to the macro of careers and the working life. We talk about the next best step that someone can take if they're struggling in their day-to-day professional career, and about finding that spark that can breed new life into the working week. We discuss the career experiment and how it's more possible now than it has been ever before to put a toe into the waters of a career change without needing to dive straight into the deep end. We chat about the workplace, the challenges of management and leadership, and how people as individuals are often rated or judged exclusively on their output rather than their whole self, and how they themselves, as much as their leaders and managers, are often the ones doing the judging. We go through the detachment from meaning that is so common to the working experience for so many people these days, and we also consider the prevailing landscape in 2020 and beyond, with the effects of a global pandemic and the economic fallout from that, about the certainty of uncertainty in our lives and careers, and about how now, in this strange year, might be the best time to lay the foundations of future career progression. So let me bring you my conversation with academic psychologist and careers coach, Nicola Porter. Nicola, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Shane.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to this, wherever it goes. So I want to get straight into your work as a career coach. You come from a psychology, academic psychology background, and you're doing a lot of work now in career coaching. It feels like right now where we are, and we're recording this in September 2020, with so much uncertainty around the world in what the world is going to be like in 1 month, 2 months, 3 months and beyond. And that's related to the pandemic, but it's also related to the recession and the fallout, however deep that might be, of whatever's coming down the tracks for businesses. And I guess that lots of people listening to this, I would imagine there are more people uncertain about the future than are certain about it. And even within the uncertainties that people have, there are grades of uncertainty that might range from kind of low level, not sure what's going to happen the next couple of months, to kind of maybe even panic or great deep anxiety about what the future holds. If we're to talk about your work as a career coach, what does that look like? What does the process look like when, if and when somebody comes to you to chat about where they might go?
Well, so I would describe myself as a career change coach. So I help people take stock and figure out what their next best step is. I think that's important, that career change is it's a one step at a time process. I think often it's portrayed as sort of this big leap into the unknown, but actually it's a step at a time. I particularly enjoy working with people who don't know what else they want to do. So, you know, there's a lot of uncertainty around that. And I think part of a coach's role is to hold that space and kind of believe in someone until they're able to believe in themselves. So, you know, I think it's, you know, at the moment, you may not feel ready to step into a new career, but it's a great time to be laying some foundations for a career change down the line. You know, and with any change, there's always going to be an element of uncertainty, although I take your point that for some people that may be to quite an extreme.
Typically when people change career, this may not be typical, but this is the sense that I have, is that we hear the stories, and it's a repeated story, it's a narrative about somebody working for a corporate, they're working a corporate job in a big building with 2,000, 3,000 people, and they're feeling detached from the work they do, and they jack that in and they become a painter or an artist, or they start a business, whatever it might be, that it's often a journey from a cold corporate environment that isn't kind of aligning with who they are to something that's completely opposite of that and very creative. I'm sure that that's a gross simplification of the way things are. So what are some of the patterns that you see in the people that come to you?
Typically, although not exclusively, I work with people who are mid-career. So that technically means sort of 10 or more years in the same profession. But they come from all walks of life. Yes, some will come from corporate, but teachers, whatever profession you're in, you can reach a point where you have changed. The way you want to live changes. You know, maybe what can often happen is there's some major life event, you know, maybe like a health issue, and that triggers a desire to live or maybe a need to live in a different way. You know, work-life balance is often, and wanting to change that is often at the heart of someone's desire to make a career change. In terms of kind of going into something more creative, that can be a part of it, that they want to do something that enables them to express themselves in a different way. And I mean, that would have been part of it for me, was that kind of running my own business. The coaching enables me to do all kinds of creative things. And I mean, I had a conversation with someone about this the other day. I think, isn't there creativity can mean all sorts of different things. It's not just art. You know, it's not just writing a book. You know, it can't be, you could be creative in a nonprofit or, you know, in all kinds of different roles as a teacher or whatever. But maybe it is partly about searching for that creative spark in yourself. But I think that can manifest in many different ways. And sometimes I think some of the people that I work with, they may not ultimately change to a new career, but they maybe change their role within the same career or the projects that they do. You know, it's a process of working out what kind of lights you up, you know, what kind of finding that spark again.
Stephen Pressfield's The War of Art came to mind when you were speaking there in terms of what the definitions of creativity. And I think there's a passage in that where he defines creativity as everything from writing the great American novel to starting up a new plumbing company. Everything that we try to do that pushes us into an arena where we're not sure what's going to happen is an act of creativity.
Where you're reaching into yourself to do something in a new and different way. You know, and sometimes people will come to say, well, you know, I'm not creative, but they'll be great problem solvers, or, you know, they'll be the person in their family that comes up with a great Christmas present, or, you know, there's all different kinds of creativity. And I do think for some people that kind of starting your own business can be a part of it, you know, where they want to look at that, maybe starting a side hustle but I think there are other things that play into that other than creativity. So for example, wanting to have greater autonomy, you know, or more flexibility in your schedule, for example.
Yes. You mentioned about that spark, that thing that lights you up, or finding that thing. What's your approach to, or do you have an approach to find or help somebody find what that is?
Yeah, I have an idea when I set out. So there are certain things that you want to look at when you're thinking about making a career change. But I try not to be too prescriptive, because everyone is an individual with their own story. Say with some people, the route into finding that spark might be looking at their values. So kind of what's really important to them. It might be, with some people, it's their strengths. We always have this idea that, oh, I know what I'm really good at. But what are you really good at, but that you also enjoy doing? You know, because you can be great at something, particularly if you've been in a job for 10 or more years, but really not want to get up and do it when you get up in the morning. You know, and uncovering your strengths, being able to say clearly what they are and make choices that will play to your strengths can really just change everything for someone. Working on identifying and developing your strengths improves life satisfaction. There are all kinds of benefits there. But I think with coaching, it's listening to what the person is saying and what they're not saying and looking out for those shifts in energy. You know, when someone starts to talk about, very often, even though someone will say they don't know what they want to do, it might not even come in the first session. It'll be a couple in and they'll go, you know, I just always really wanted to do whatever X, but that's impossible. But when you unpack it, there's often a version of it that they can start to take steps towards. And if you're looking for that change in energy and following that thread.
I love that. And that piece of, I'd love to do that, but that's impossible. I would expect that's almost everybody has that in has that sentence, that line in them to some degree. Is that just a mindset thing? What are the other factors that are at play in breaking something down that might seem impossible to make it possible?
Again, I think, you know, if you've been in the same profession, so when we're talking about career change, I'm mainly talking about a change from one profession to another rather than just maybe changing jobs. But, you know, you've a really strong sense of work identity. Your story as whatever that role is very strong. And it's hard to think another way. It's hard to even, I think, imagine it. And because you're maybe in that role, all of your colleagues and your friends, they're all in the same profession, you know, in that maybe corporate setting, and probably other people aren't talking about the desire to change career. You know, it's something you tend to keep to yourself in the beginning anyway. It just becomes like this impossible thing that only you are thinking about. You know, there's a phrase that comes up quite a lot when I'm talking to people. It's like, you know, I feel like a square peg in a round hole. You know, I just feel like I don't fit. It doesn't really suit me anymore. It's not me. You know, but as I said, we tend to keep that to ourselves.
I'm a self-experimenter. When I look for evidence, I look at my own experiences first. That's the opposite of the academic model, of kind of the scientific academic model. But I know some of the jobs I was in, and the jobs were like, I remember there was one or two jobs in particular that people looking in from the outside said, that's amazing. That's an amazing job. That's geez, that must be amazing. That must be really exciting. Mm-hmm. And when I was in there day to day, it was the complete opposite of that. It was like square peg and round hole times 10. just not the correct fit. Like nothing was in alignment with my values. Having said that, the challenge there was that I hadn't taken the steps to discover what my values were. So I didn't know it wasn't in alignment of my values, but I just felt it at a kind of a physiological level, there's something wrong here. I'm not enjoying this. Yeah. And then what it came down to was, because I tend to judge myself first, was like, you know, I'm not good enough, and me withdraw as opposed to this job isn't right and I'll seek a different direction. And then it had kind of far reaching implications on mental health. When you see people coming to you from the workplace, is that a common experience? Is there something broken about the modern workplace that results in people feeling this way? Or is it, on the flip side of that, something that we need to do and take more responsibility for finding out where our values are so that we can explore that and move forward with that? Or is this just a natural occurrence in a typical career that we enter something and we go with the flow and we then hit a point in time where we need to backtrack or reverse?
I mean, I think in some ways it's broken in the sense that if you get to that point that it's not working for you, it's hard to, let's say if there isn't career development as part of your job experience, you know, so if you're left to your own devices, or, you know, I think sometimes there could be more support to help people to develop. I also think I think a lot about things like kind of workload and how that can affect how you enjoy your work. You know, so if you have an impossible workload, no matter how great the job is, that's very challenging. You know, and I do think we work, particularly with some jobs, you know, it's still how long your hours are. And when you were talking there, I think it's also just a part of life. Like, life is change. And, you know, some of my clients will say, you know, I love my job in the beginning. You know, when I came out of college, this really suited me. But I've just gotten to the point now where it's not challenging me anymore. Or, like you say, I want to do something more creative, or I want a better work-life balance, or, you know, I've been ill for a period of time and I need to do things differently. But I mean, that's kind of life, isn't it, really? I mean, I do think that the workplace, it plays a role in terms of how it takes care of its people. You know, I think how we look after people isn't always perhaps as it could be in the workplace.
Management and leadership. And in many ways, a manager might not be a great leader, and a leader might not be a great manager. But those two things, if they are separate, are so rare. The good management, good leadership is rare, and that can have a massive effect on somebody's sense of belonging and the value that they add or are getting from a role or a business. So my question really is, does that play a big part in it, or is it more so an inevitable consequence of the journey of life, that we want to experience different things, and we eventually kind of grow apart from the thing that we once loved or once were wedded to?
I would imagine it's probably a mix of both. I mean, certainly having a negative experience in your current work situation can prompt you to make a change. But that, for some people, might simply mean a change to the same role in another company. You know, it wouldn't necessarily, I think, lead to a desire to completely change career. But I think that, like what you're saying about the leadership, I think that can sometimes play a part in the sense of, like, how do you want to lead in your own life, in a way, you know, kind of what, sometimes with clients we can talk about things like, what do you want your legacy to be? You know, what kind of role model do you want to be for your children or for the young people in your life? And because we do, I think as we get older, we start to think about who do we want to become? Like, it's not always about what we want to do, it's who do we want to be? And sometimes those people that we come across in our lives that maybe we don't like how they manage, or we don't like how, like, it's a way for us to work out, well, how do I want to be? How do I want to do things differently? Because certainly there have been people in my own life where, let's just call them, maybe there was a personality clash or whatever, but I thought, well, when I do that role, I want to do things differently, and here's how I'm going to do them. There are all kinds of different reasons why people want to change career. People can be a part of that. And I think one of the challenges when our identity starts to change, like, that's when you start to shift into, okay, well, maybe I would like to start my own business, is that the people that you are currently working with are on maybe a different path to you. And so career change can sometimes feel a little isolating, and having a coach is great in that sense, because you've got someone in your corner championing you and challenging you at the same time and to keep going. And I think it's important to, like, there's different communities online that support other career changers. It's great to have that kind of, that other people have that desire too. It's like that you're not really just a square peg in a round hole, you know, that you will find your way through.
I think you've touched on something there that's really important, and I'd love to explore it a bit more. That sense of isolation that seems to be kind of prevalent right across the board, no matter who we speak to, and that we are more technologically connected, more hyper-connected. We have, you know, 500 plus LinkedIn connections, and we've, you know, 942 Facebook friends, and we've 600 followers on Twitter, and we've nobody to talk to. And I guess that piece of being heard actually being heard, I expect is a big part of the value that both you get and you give.
Yeah, as in terms of the coaching.
Yeah,
absolutely. I think it's, as I said, having someone there who has seen that there is another side and can help you. Because, I mean, with any change, with career change, there's going to be that period of discomfort, you know, while things are changing up. But just to come back to kind of the isolation piece, you know, I think you asked me at the very beginning about my approach, you know, so there's that self-reflection piece, you working at your values, working at your strengths. There's also needs to be experimentation, trying things out. So there's kind of taking action, reflection, but a huge part is the people. It's crucial that kind of building a network and starting to talk to people, you know, who give you energy and make you leave a conversation thinking, you know, yeah, maybe that is possible for me. You know, if they think I can do it, you know, and thinking carefully about kind of who you spend your time with and how, you know, you've talked about kind of different people. I've been doing quite a bit on LinkedIn lately with kind of career changers and asking me how to use kind of LinkedIn for a career change, you know, and I think it's a little bit like you're saying about kind of being hyper connected, but it's I think of it like curating your feed, that information that's coming into you. And if you don't customize even, you know, the kind of the posts that come in, so that what comes in engages you. And the more you do that and kind of train LinkedIn or help it learn what you do and don't like, the more you start to get connected with people with similar interests. You know, so it's like, say, even how a mutual connection that this podcast came about, you know, or that we were reading the same article during the week about kind of work-life balance and that type of thing. It's not about the number of connections. I think it's about increasing those quality connections. But one thing that people, I think, often overlook is that if you want to make a career change, your existing connections are likely to be people who are doing in the same space as you. So you probably need to build more on your, what are sometimes described as kind of weaker ties or weaker dormant ties, you know, so maybe kind of former colleagues, alumni, friends of friends, you know, and just to start engaging and connecting with people. Getting, we talked about this before, but getting out of your kind of comfort zone and finding kind of more like-minded people, you know. So I found when I was moving more into the entrepreneur space, you know, it's great to connect with other people who are at the same place as you. And, you know, it's the same with the kind of career change, other people that are looking to do something different. And a coach can be, I suppose, a gateway into that, can make suggestions about how to connect with other people.
I heard Patrick Bet-David in the US. Now, Patrick Bet-David, if you're not familiar with him, is, I won't say love him or hate him, but he's close to that direction. I find a lot of value in a lot of the things he has an entrepreneur YouTube channel and content, and he's written some books, and he's very kind of out there and brash in certain ways, but I find kind of a lot of genuineness or authenticity in the way he's talking. But he said something recently about, you know, if you lose your job or if you're out of work and you don't have another one within 4 weeks, the primary problem there is your network. That you don't okay. have a strong enough network that will allow you to kind of to break into another job in the same industry or some opportunity in a different industry. Have you thought about, like, over the last 6 months, we have gone from vibrant cities everywhere to cities or ghost towns and just sort of getting back to some level of normality now, but a lot of people are still working from their home offices. Have you thought about anything in terms of that network-driven part of career change and how that might mm-hmm. help people, how we might approach that or achieve that in a world where we're all in our own offices and we don't have networking events or conferences to go to?
Yeah. Well, as someone who never really loved conferences or networking events, I think that it comes back to, isn't it, just that idea of, well, what's possible and what isn't. If you tell yourself that it's impossible, well, you stop before you even start. Sometimes as well, I think people, when you said that, the first thing that came to mind is, well, you could pick up the phone and call someone, you know, blog actually that I'll send you the link, you can put it in the show notes, that talks about starting with curiosity when it comes to career change. You know, you don't need to put a whole lot of pressure on yourself about exactly what your new career will look like, but you can just start with that thread. You know, what am I interested in? Is there someone else I know who's working in this space? You know, is there someone who might know someone, you know, and can I have a chat with them? So on a very simple level, you know, maybe it's a neighbor or a friend of a friend or a cousin, you know, and can you just pick up the phone and have a chat with them? And so there's a term called an informational interview. People might like to look that up, where the idea is it's a little bit more structured. So just go into the call, you know, kind of, well, what do you like? What do you not like? And the big one is there anyone else that you know would be great to talk to about this? And start to build your connections that way. But I mean, I'm a huge and unapologetically big fan of LinkedIn. I think it's fantastic when used in the right way. And I think it starts with that kind of curating your feed and starting to, like, if you're interested in a topic, starting to create, getting that content in and connecting with people. Kind of reach, I always think it's a good idea to include a kind of a note, you know, you can add a note to your invitation to connect, to give some context, read your article, would love to hear more about it. You know, you can reach out to people that way, but I would say maybe start engaging with their content first and start, you know, building with your existing connections, but also maybe join your alumni group. You know, alumni are great because it's a group of people who've been through a common experience to you and are often very willing to help someone who's kind of been to the same school or college as you. You know, you can reach out, someone might not respond, but equally, I think people are generally willing and delighted to help if they can. You know, if it's just a short conversation or...
That piece of asking for that 15 minutes.
Exactly.
Is often too much for a lot of people in terms of...
Okay.
That invites a level of vulnerability that I think a lot of us would struggle with. Is that fair?
Yes. Yeah, I think so. Maybe it's like anything else. You need to kind of flex that muscle, you know, and so kind of start, I would say start small. It's like even with social media, I think you forget when you've been using it as much as probably you and I have at this stage, that there was a point even for me, I didn't even like commenting on a Facebook post, you know, never mind putting something out there of my own creation. You know, so maybe if it's about talking to people, as I said, start with someone you know, start with a friend, you know, oh, hey, do you happen to know anyone working in this space, I'd love to find out more about it. But there are all kinds of ways of doing what I think of as career experiments. You know, so even something as simple as, you know, oh, I'm really interested in psychology. It's always really fascinated me. You know, do a, you know, a MOOC, like one of those online open courses. Do you stick with it? Do you enjoy it? Are you telling people about what you've learned? Does it engage you as much as you thought it might? You know, if you thought, oh, I'd always love to do some kind of teaching. What's your area of expertise? Could you do, I don't know, a webinar for friends and see how that goes and do you enjoy it? You know, so there's so many. I love sitting down with people and brainstorming ways that they could try something that they're interested in. And people are hugely important, but I would say don't feel like you have to go from kind of 0 to 60 in a week. And that's why I'm kind of, my message at the moment would be like, take this time now to kind of lay those foundations for a career change, and a coach will help you to kind of take that in a step-by-step way. And, you know, just that kind of idea of your future self may find, like, in a year's time, that making that 15-minute call easy peasy, might not be easy now, but as your confidence grows, like that often amazes me with the coaching, you know, particularly when you're working with strengths, you can just see people becoming more confident as they become, and with your values too, you become clearer about what you want and who you want to become. Your decision making is easier. Instead of, people often come to me and they're like, oh, I'm just overwhelmed by all these job alerts and jobs that don't suit or I don't have the right. The clearer you become on what direction you want to go in, the easier all that becomes, because you're just, you have a compass that's kind of pointing you in the right direction.
Is that compass available to everybody, or is there a sense that some people are drawn in, you know, 3, 4, or 5 multiple different directions and they're just really curious and they have that shiny object syndrome?
I think so. There's a wonderful website called, I think it's called puttylike.com, and she talks about, she's a TED talk too, about being a multi-potentialite, you know, where you've lots of interests in kind of different things. But I do think there are ways to combine them. So, I mean, even going by my own kind of experience, that's partly why I love the coaching and the business, because you can, like in the morning, if I decided I'd love to try podcasting, there's just isn't there. It's like a treasure trove of things to learn. It's a great way to do. But I think you can build that into to nearly, like we're talking about career, but really we're talking about just life, because career is just a part of our lives, a bigger picture. So any career move has to take into account our like financial, family responsibilities, how we want to spend our time.
We've talked a little bit about values and the importance of having our own values definition exercise or whatever you might describe it. Something I acknowledge now that I did not even consider really strongly, and it sounds bizarre to say it, but I did not even consider strongly for a long time, is the kind of the flip side of that and the value that I offer, what I contribute. Because that's the essential piece, right? For it, no matter what career or job or vocation or whatever we do, we have to be doing something that provides value to whoever is contracting our services or whatever it is on the other side. Does your work encapsulate any of that piece of how we even think about the value of the things we do?
Yeah, and I think that for me is one of the my main motivations, is because to see someone being able to be their best self in their career means that they're making their best contribution. And that's where it becomes meaningful and it becomes satisfying. And certainly as we do this kind of research that shows that as we get older, we become more other focused. And certainly a lot of my, I'm not saying that when we're younger, we're not, just that tends to show that we start to shift into that more thinking about kind of contribution. And certainly a lot of clients who would come to me would say, you know, I would like to do something that's more direct. I can see more directly that I'm helping in some way. You know, I think that's a really, and sometimes it's not even that the roles they're in aren't helping professions. It's just that maybe it doesn't suit them anymore. They're not playing to their strengths, or maybe it's not meeting their values. You know, if you're in a role and, I don't know, say your number one value is being effective, and you spend all your time trying to get things fixed, like say maybe tech that's not working or working with a difficult manager, you know, if you can work out a way to play to your, or to align more with your values, you know, so say like if you're working for yourself, if something's not working, you can fix it. If you don't, it's your own fault.
The detachment from the beneficial outcome of the work we do. There's an example that springs to mind, and I'm trying to recall the details of it, but I know it was a car company. It could have been Toyota. Mm-hmm. And they brought in some of their, you know, end users, the guys that were the their customers that were, you know, 6 steps away from the people on the assembly line. Mm-hmm. And they heard, actually, I remember the details now, but I can't remember the company. So I'll dig out the name of the company. But it was U.S. Army, was the U.S. Army or the U.S. Air Force was one of the customers of this company, and they brought in some of the, you know, generals or admirals of the army to meet the people on the assembly line. And they were the military leaders were talking. They basically came in and thanked the people in the assembly line for the work that they do, and that you know, your work is essential in us feeling safe in the air when we're doing what we need to do. Mm-hmm. And that level of connection between the work that we do, whether it's an assembly line or the assembly line is a metaphor for something else. So we're sitting in a desk in a cubicle and we're getting through a work day, and we're not actually sure about the contribution of the work we're doing, and we're not seeing it up close. And that, from a career development or career change or career definition perspective, I think that there's something that all of us can do, no matter what level we're at, whether we're the operative that's posting our 40 or 50 hour a week, or we're the manager or leader who's there to look out for our team and our staff and the whole person who's working with us. And I think that that is one of the primary drivers for the loss of meaning, I think, in people's day-to-day, week-to-week. The idea that our salary, our check at the end of the week or the end of the month is all the benefit or the validation that we need from the work we do. If it was ever true, it definitely feels not true anymore. Is that fair? Is that something that you've kind of...
The other thing I would say is that, though, for some people, was it Einstein, that concept of a kind of good enough job came from, where, you know, where was it he worked? Was it the patent's office? I know there's something... So sometimes people... That's enough of a reason, so because it enables them to do what they want to do outside of work. But I think for a lot of people, you know, work plays a very central role in our lives, and it needs to be. Countless times I've heard people say to me, you know, I've realized money isn't actually the primary driver for me. Of course, they need to meet certain financial commitments, but, you know, there are other things that are more important. And I think that kind of being connected to kind of what the, like you're saying, well, seeing the good that your work does or seeing the contribution, like there's a lot out there about that idea of finding your passion, which is not totally unrelated to that kind of spark, kind of finding the thing that lights you up. But I think it's even more importantly about finding out where you can make your best contribution. And I think that's a combination of, because if you're working somewhere that aligns with your values, it frees you to play to your strengths and to do your best work. And then it enables you to make your kind of best contribution. Whereas if those kind of other pieces aren't there, or if you're in a kind of a structure that's, I mean, even we've kind of touched on before about kind of maybe being an introvert, you know, if you're in a workspace that, you know, you're in an open plan office, it's really noisy, you never get any time to kind of recover from that, it's very hard to do your best work because you're so depleted. So, I mean, there are all different aspects to a career change. And sometimes even the environment that you work in and changing that can be hugely beneficial. But then I think probably the recent months have been, people have been forced into a career experiment of sorts. But if you want to take something good out of that, you know, take the time, say, well, what out of this working from home work for me? You know, what did I like? What did I not like? How would I like to change things going forward? So if there's kind of one first step that people could take, it's the simplest thing, I would say, get yourself a note-taking app or a good old-fashioned notebook, and start to be more present with, you know, if you find yourself in that situation where you're not feeling connected to your work, where it's all about the paycheck, seize the opportunity to kind of be a bit of a detective and say, okay, well, and look out for those really good and bad moments and say, well, what in this moment was great? What made me feel good? Or what didn't? Who was there? Who was I working with? What was happening at the time? And start to move towards integrating more of the things that are satisfying, enjoyable. You know, if you realize, oh, you know, I really want to kind of maybe make more of a contribution. Is there volunteering opportunities, for example? That's another great way of doing a career experiment. You know, Volunteer Ireland even have a kind of from home, volunteering from home now. They have a great kind of endeavor there. You can do micro volunteering, little small things that you can do. Again, you know, if you find yourself in the situation that you're feeling that sense of disconnection or you're not happy at work, so, okay, well, what am I going to do about it? You know, and it only has to be your next best step. Yeah. You know, it doesn't have to be, oh, how am I going to change my world by tomorrow and go into this new role? It can just be, what one small thing can I change? Who can I talk to? What can I do? What can I try? You know, there's a wonderful website called, it's called Values in Action, VIA Character Strengths. Have you come across that?
No, I haven't, no.
So it's rooted in positive psychology, strong evidence base, which I really like. They have a free survey, scientific survey, where you can get a profile of your character strengths. But they also have, which is lovely, for each strength, ways that you can develop it and integrate it more into your life. Very simple way to get started with strengths. It's free. You know, why not do it? You know, and then even you can make decisions in your current role that enable you to play more to your strengths.
On that career experiments piece, because that fascinates me, because I think that we have this identity challenge in general. Maybe it's less so in the younger generations, maybe than the people who have been in the workplace for 20 or 30 years. But we have a kind of a wedded or this umbilical cord with the identity of the job we do or the company we work for. And that idea of the career experiments, and it feels like, correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems like right now, given the connectivity that we have and the wealth of information that's out there, it feels like the best time. There's never been a better time to conduct one of those career experiments.
Yeah, because I think for some, not everyone, but for some, there's a space created maybe by not having to commute, you know, from working from home.
When I said best time ever, not necessarily with the pandemic, but with just the level of kind of the maturity of the internet, I suppose.
Okay, yeah, so that it's kind of presents opportunities that maybe weren't there before. Yeah, I think absolutely. And, you know, your career experiment can be as small or as big as you like, you know. And for example, if you're interested in a topic, you could easily set up, a Facebook page to vote and start putting out posts. You know, it doesn't necessarily have to be a novel or a nonfiction book, or even a blog. You can start on a very small scale. You know, what's the kind of easiest way into something? And sometimes, you know, if working with a coach isn't an option, you know, pick a friend or a colleague who's great at brainstorming. How could I approach this? And start to, I suppose, to shift that sense of identity, though, you need to do those career experiments so that you can start to even tell a different story about yourself, to start to move away from that. I'm just thinking of, there's a career change expert, Herminia Ibarra, and she wrote a book on a kind of working identities. And she talks about the idea of possible selves, that we all have these different versions of ourselves, you know, of who we could be. And so she suggests generating a list of kind of possible different things that we would like to try or be or roles, and then seeing how we can conduct a career experiment on one of those in some small way. Just to get, it's about, if I could say to anything to anyone, just get started, you know, take one small step. Because things start to shift. It's about kind of gaining momentum.
It is a beautiful thing, and I can understand how a coach or a buddy or somebody would be hugely beneficial, because I sense when it comes to career experiments and that type of thing of exploring what your possible selves might be, I sense that many of us are caught up in whether an unconscious fear of not being good at the thing that we do from the very, very start.
Yeah. What if I'm not good at it? But I mean, I suppose, and maybe that's one of the most challenging things. I think if you've been in a job or a profession for a long time, we have, like, I mean, most of the people and all of the people I think I've worked with, they're really good at what they do. It's not that they're not good at their jobs. And it's very hard to think of starting again. Yeah. But actually, I think often your new career is a combination. It's not like you leave behind everything that came before. You know, I often think of it a little bit like going on holidays. You know, so your career changes your destination. And you're deciding, well, what do I want to bring with me? You know, so do I need to buy anything new? Is there any new skills I need to learn? And what do I want to leave behind? You know, and it's kind of thinking about, well, what do I want to take with me? And sometimes that destination might become clearer as you kind of put your things together. But
I love the analogy of the metaphor of the headlights in the fog. that we only ever see, you know, five car lengths ahead of us at any one time. But once we continue to see those five car lengths, we'll be okay. We'll find the road.
Yeah. So, you know, it's all right not to have this fully formed idea of where we want to go. You know, you just have to go, okay, well, what's my next best step? And if I follow my curiosity, you know, where will that take me? And to be okay with not knowing. Like, yes, if you're in one role and you think, oh, maybe I'd like to, I don't know, be a teacher, it might seem like a huge... The other thing that people often get a stumbling block for them is, oh, well, I have to go back to college. I don't want to go back to college. I can't afford to go back to college. But that's jumping 10 steps ahead of where you need to be, you know. And I mean, like I say, there are many different types of teacher. There's many different ways of sort of satisfying that desire to teach. And it's the same for any kind of profession. And often I think what people end up doing is sometimes even a version or a job that they could never have imagined at the beginning of their journey, you know. So, it's in some ways, the uncertainty is an essential part of a career change, and staying with that uncertainty is a part of it.
And that's a nice segue into where I wanted to finish on, and to invite you to get really macro for a minute. When I look back at, and I think all of us of a certain age, maybe still when you're leaving school or you're in your last couple of years of school, there's the career guidance teacher or the career guidance officer who kind of talks you through some options or wherever you might go. And it feels like the generation who came out of school or college and got into a job and spent their entire working lives in that job, that feels very anachronistic now, and that some of the Yuval Noah Harari has written about the future of the future of mankind and the future of humanity, and that in the 21st century, I think he says that the number one skill that will be required is the combination of resilience and adaptability, to be able to adapt to wildly changing environments and work environments. In terms of career coaching, with that kind of flux, uncertainty, and the need for adaptability and resilience in the work we do, is this something that you will see people needing to kind of have almost as a skill set in their armory multiple times during their working career, that it won't be just a kind of a mid-career in the near future or the midterm future, it won't be just a mid-career need to transition from one career to the first half of their work life career to the second half, that this is something that might happen 3, 4, 5 times or more during their work lives?
Yeah, I mean, I think coaching provides a space, a supportive space, that you give yourself, so where you're willing to invest the time and the effort to look at what's possible. And I think, and then to kind of come up with a plan for how to get there. And I think taking that time and that space is valuable at any point in your career. And I think that it, you know, if it was built in at any stage, I can't see that it would be anything other than an advantage. Because if you don't pause to reflect on where you're going, it's easy, isn't it, to find yourself, how did I end up here? You know, I've worked really hard. I've done this, that, and the other thing, and this is not where I want to be. But I think the more that you can press pause, and ideally, as I said, someone with coaching, you know, it's about asking the right questions. It's not about telling someone what to do. So having that kind of objective and slightly kind of more structured space. Because, I mean, with career, it's so important, and yet we rarely take time to sort of step out of it and go, well, is this working for me? Is it not? Sometimes even a small tweak can make a huge difference. But you need to kind of say, okay, I'm going to stop now and take a look. And that's kind of why I sort of say to people, you know, that I work with them to take stock first, you know, to stop and say, okay, well, what's working, what isn't, what do I want to change, and how are we going to do that?
Nicola, it's been a pleasure talking to you.
You too. Thank you, Shane.
Can I invite you to let us know where we can find out more or connect with any of the work that you do in various online platforms that you're a part of?
Sure. So my website is www.coached, that's coachd.ie. So that would be maybe your first port of call. I often run workshops on different topics, like how to get started with career change. And they will be on my website, but do sign up to my mailing list, because I regularly send out kind of content, and my whole thing is kind of career change one step at a time. And of course, connect with me on LinkedIn. I would love to meet you there.
Thanks, Nicola.
Talk to you again, Shane.
Shane here again, really briefly before I sign off. I know that 30-minute, 45-minute, 60-minute podcast, which is what most episodes of the Life Well Lived podcast are, is a big investment of your time, and your time is your most valuable asset. So it's a huge privilege for me to have you here with me and my guests for this. So thank you so much for listening. This project, the Life Well Lived project, including this podcast and my writing on my website, is motivated by this. There is so much unhappiness, anxiety and depression in the world, and this work is about trying to make things better, tiny bit by tiny bit, one day at a time. The vision is a world where this cycle of unhappiness, anxiety and depression does not have to be handed down across multiple generations and accepted as an unavoidable fact of life. The vision is a world where everyone is liberated to know, embrace and express the full breadth of their own individual uniqueness. And the vision is a world where we can work together to solve big problems rather than squabble over minor matters out of a place of insecurity and hurt. So with all that said, let me invite you to do one of the following three things. And if you want to go ahead and do all three, please do, and be a superstar listener. I'll be really grateful. Firstly, if there was something, anything that you found particularly useful in the episode you've just listened to, please let people know. Send an email, tell someone at the bus stop, take a screenshot of this episode and post it to your favorite social media. It all helps to spread the word about this episode and the Life Well Lived podcast in general. Secondly, post a review. Please go to Apple Podcasts and find this show and leave a review. And when you do, please tag me. I'm at Shane Breslin almost everywhere on Twitter, LinkedIn, Instagram, and Facebook. And thirdly and finally, if you want to make sure you don't miss any future episodes, please sign up for updates about the Life Well Lived project. Go to my website at shanebreslin.com/mission. That's shanebreslin.com/mission.